probably fewer people listening live today, more people listening on the podcast. Thank you for all of those of you who subscribe, all of you who listen to this. But yeah, I'm just picturing a lot. Normally on a holiday Monday, you're supposed to get up a little later. Seeing some friends, maybe you're seeing some family, got something planned. If you got kids, I don't know, maybe you're going to see the baby cow in Hyde Park, see the cherry blossoms. I don't know what it is, but I'm just picturing many of you being grumpy about it today, that this is not your typical holiday Monday. This is one where you'd like for it to be a lot different. You'd probably rather that the Leafs still be in it and you be working. So they tell you when you're upset about something, it's like either an email that you want to draft to your boss or a text message you want to send when you're upset with a friend or a partner, to sleep on it. I didn't get the best sleep on it last night. I didn't. I was up late. I couldn't help myself. I watched every little piece of video from every single player that was there. I did my best to go through, again, a bunch of messages on Twitter and Instagram, which I'll probably be doing more of today because I care about the fans. I care deeply about the fan base in this city. And I know how much last night stung. Last night stung for a lot of different reasons, but I think I've honed in on a few of them. One is that a lot of people defended this core. A lot. I at many times defended this core. And what was the return on that? For years, so many people from the outside, like I liken it almost to a sibling thing, where if someone makes fun of your brother or your sister, you get your back up about it. But you can make fun of your brother or sister. You can trounce on them. And you as a fan have done probably that. You've probably had your questions about this team and about go on down the line about whatever individual has been a part of the losses over the last decade. And if a friend of yours that was a Habs fan or a Sens fan or whatever, you were on Twitter, who cares, that they were taking shots at your team, you probably got defensive and you said, hey, this is how I feel about my group. Internally with you and your friends, it probably was a very different story. But all of the doubts that you had and all of the chirps that were levied really did come to fruition. And not just that, what I found really frustrating about last night, and this wasn't the Leafs doing, this wasn't them. I thought that the players spoke well when asked questions about fans leaving early or jerseys on the ice. But I was seeing this stuff out of Florida, right? It's Paul Maurice saying, hey, the 6-1 game was actually close. Or it was Brad Marchand doing his Brad Marchand thing, talking about, well, the pressure of this market, they just beat it into you. And how could they deal with that? And he even had a line yesterday where it was, and you see how they're treated after that. As in the fans booing and the fans leaving early and the fans throwing jerseys on the ice. And I get it to a degree. I don't think that that's actually gamesmanship by them. I don't think that's some wide conspiracy about, hey, they want the Leafs to run it back. Hey, they see the Leafs and they are thinking, God, they should just keep doing this because we keep beating on them. Brad Marchand, he's beat them 5 straight times in the postseason. Why wouldn't he want to see the Leafs continue to run this back? I genuinely don't think that's what it is. I think that the game is a fraternity. It is a club. And those guys do have some empathy for the players on the other side. Maurice is coached in this market. Brad Marchand has been the captain of a team in a very visible market. those guys do understand that there is a different level of pressure here from the fan base and from the, just the city in general. But this is one of the issues to me, and this is one of the things that I slept on last night. The culture that this team has cultivated over the last 11 seasons under Brandon Shanahan is a massive problem. Huge problem. Huge, huge, huge problem. And if there's one thing that's refreshing about today, it's that the fan base is kind of, in my opinion, going to now largely be on the same page, which is asking for change. There has been so many years, so many years where there has been infighting, right? Whether it was fighting over Dubas, fighting over the contracts and whether these players should have gotten these, or fighting over whether the Tavares contract was good or not, or fighting over fringy players like the Timothy Liljegrens of the world, for God's sakes, fighting over trades, fighting over whether Cad should have left, fighting over which coach it should be, fighting over style of play, blah, 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 blah. Every offseason was a lot of people going, hey, you can't run this back. And then a bunch of people going, no, you have to run it back. Yo, they got the bad bounces. Oh, they got goalied. Oh, they were snake bitten. Oh, it was Sheldon Keefe's fault. Oh, if it was anybody but Kyle Dubas building this team. So many things were not directed at the entirety of it all. Some people would always say that Brandon Shanahan doesn't get enough blame, and I always agreed with those people. But today, and I'm working off of just social media and the conversations that I'm having with my friends, so I'll admit that this is a bubble for me too. This is largely anecdotal. But I do feel as though I've got a pretty good pulse of the fan base. If there's one thing that I do feel as though I get to be an authority on, it is someone who has spent his entire life having conversations about this team and always really trying to understand what it is people are going through, the highs and lows of being a sports fan. And I don't think that there are very many people that don't feel as though this culture is rotten, that it's disconnected, and that fans have had enough, to the point where most people would agree that it's prudent in a hockey sense to just let one of Team Canada's best players walk in free agency. Is it a mistake? Can we play hindsight? Yes, of course. Were there people like myself that were saying after the Montreal series, yo, it's probably time to move off of one of these guys. Hey, it's probably time to shuffle things up a little bit. Yes, 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 of course. Whatever. Who cares about this now? Who cares about what could have been and what should have been? It's about the now. And again, sleep on it, right? Sleep on it, sleep on it, sleep on it. Sleep on a decision like this. Are you really going to let a player like this walk for free? It's awful business to do that. Here's what I will say. The players are right. There is a lot of pressure. Mitch Marner is right. He and his camp, they're right. He took too much of it. He did. In comparison to his colleagues, like if you think about what we've always heard, which is that, hey, they didn't like the fact that Matthews gets treated so much differently or that the perception around him is so much different than it is around Marner. Look at this playoff run. They each had a goal. And Austin Matthews is the best goal scorer in the NHL. The entire argument for him making more money and being a better player is not just based in the fact that he's a center. It's that, hey, this guy scores goals. He one guy helps create them, but one guy's a finisher, and the league has always paid for more goals. Matthews didn't score. Matthews scored one time, and he was celebrated for it. He really was. So Marner's camp and Marner's people and anybody that has felt as though Marner takes too much of the blame, I agree. I genuinely do. I genuinely agree. He took too much heat, and he has all along. And because he's from here and he wanted commensurate value just like the other guys, he took it a little bit harsher than the others. But at this point, it's very clear and obvious that he is a very big part of what I think is the problem here, which is that there is this entitlement with this team that was built by the culture and that was enabled by the culture. This idea that you should be given everything up front and no one should question you for it. They've been protected over and over and over again. Think about it. They had that disappointing loss, right? Kyle Dubas ends up getting fired to Florida last time. And it's the president, Brendan Shanahan, who immediately contacts the players and tells them that they're not going anywhere. immediately, hey, this isn't your fault. This isn't on you. This isn't on you. This isn't on you. They brought in a head coach and they said all these things about accountability. Oh, it's going to be accountability time. Oh boy, wait till you see the accountability. And it resulted in a season in which the star players were never split up. They never had to carry a line. They were never benched for a shift. They were never skipped for one. They were never called out. They were never asked for more publicly. It was all just a coddle fest. And, you know, I think that it's gotten to a really ugly place here, where after years of, hey, don't let the outside noise in. Hey, it's the fans. Hey, God, it's so many fans that are just putting all this pressure on you. Oh, it's all the media that's driving up these narratives that they built a bubble and that bubble needs to burst. And now it is genuinely time for a change. James Myrtle of The Athletic joins me now. What's up, James? How are we doing?
Good, good. Where are we going now?
Well, I think we start with this, which is the culture, and it, because so much of this to me starts at the top. Like, you know, I'm watching Paul Maurice yesterday speak. I know you were there. I watched Brad Marchand speak about the pressure, right? And hey, the way the fans treated and how there's going to be so much stuff that's done unfairly. And all I could think of was that to me feels like such a big part of the message that has come from up top since the very beginning of this. That it all started with, hey, we got to get rid of the blue and white disease when it was Lou Lamoriello and Mike Babcock. But how quickly that shifted during the Shanna plan of, hey, we're not about accountability anymore. We are about protectionism, protectionism for the players. Taking away the photos that were in the arena and saying, hey, the ghosts are not with you. I think that is unfair to try to put all the way back to 1967 on players that have been here for nine seasons. But this idea that, hey, you lose in the playoffs and it's bad bounces. Hey, you get big contracts. That's what they deserve. And it's an unfair criticism. Hey, what are you supposed to demand of these players? What are the fan bases supposed to say? And I would say that for the most part, Leaf fans have actually loved and cherished a lot of players who have not won Stanley Cups. You think about how they look back on the teams from the early 2000s. And yeah, they didn't win cups. They had a disappointing flameout, I guess, once in an Eastern Conference final. They didn't get there year over year over year. But there was a consistency with the effort. There was a consistency with the understanding of the base. There was a connection with the fan base that I think is very different now. And the wedge that this organization has driven between its players and its fans, I think that they need to be accountable to that. I think they need to evaluate that. And I think that starts with the new president. So my question to you after that long-winded rant is, what is your expectation about what happens with Brendan Shanahan and the timeline of this?
I don't know the timeline as of today, but I would be shocked if there's not a change there. I mean, to be honest with you, JD, I think there's just reading the tea leaves in the, I mean, how many hours since the game ended? I think that everything's going to be on the table here for the organization. I think they're going to look at everything. So Shanahan's been here 11 years.
Yep.
His contract ran out. He hasn't been around the management group in a real way in quite a while. He hasn't been visible. And all of those things are indications that, you know, time was running out already. You know, I think they probably would have had to win the Stanley Cup or come very close for there to be an argument that he stays. And they were not very close. And to go back to what you were saying earlier about some of the stuff from Marchand and Maurice, I was getting it throughout the series and certainly last night from people in other organizations in the hockey world and other places saying, oh, Toronto's crazy and it's hard to play there. And I think it's a real misread of what's happening here. Because you're right. If in game five and game seven, if the Leafs played really hard and just lost to a better team or there was a bad bounce and it didn't go their way, I think that the fans and the media here are intelligent enough to understand what happened. But that's not what happened in this series. And that's not what's happened the last 9 years. And the major changes that you and I have talked about so many times that it looks like that this team needs are just so glaring if you're here watching every game. But they're missed, I think, by people outside the market, and they try and direct the blame in other ways. The reason that it's become so toxic is because they don't make the changes and they keep bringing the same guys back. And of course that's unpleasant for them. Of course. Like, can you imagine being in that? you know, at this point, I'm sure, well, I know we're going to talk about Marner. I don't think Marner wants to be part of this anymore. It's gotten so bad, and management's continued to bring back a group that they shouldn't have, that it's just gotten, I can't think of any other word for it, but just toxic. It doesn't work. And I think what you saw in this series is that it doesn't work.
That's bang on. It is toxic, but a lot of it is their own doing. Like, they have removed so much of the humanity from this hockey team. Like, even when I'm watching the answers from the players yesterday, and I ended up feeling a little bit bad for Matthews because he has the passenger line, and I know that's just going to be bandied around over and over and over again. And, you know, it's going to be turned on him because people are going to say, well, speaking of passengers, what about yourself? What about the one goal that you had in this series? Whether the one goal that you've had against the Florida Panthers in its entirety? I saw Marner being asked those questions. I saw him look exhausted. I saw Morgan Rielly be asked some of the same questions and him look exhausted. He even apologized at one point where he's like, yeah, I'm sorry that I am given the same answers. I don't mean to. And I'm like, yeah, I know you don't mean to, but also this is it. It's like the media and the fans have been perceived by you guys as these adversaries for so long. And the way that you've been told to handle it is with these just cut and dry, bland answers to hope to avoid so much of the noise. When in the reality, people just want to be able to relate to you. People just want to see you give an honest effort. Try, I hate saying try your best, because I do think that they are trying and that there's just something there that doesn't work for them in these big moments. And they either grip the sticks too tight, or they just, they lose something mentally. Maybe some of them just don't have it flat out. But it's gotten to this place, man, where you said it, it's toxic for everyone. But the fans, I don't believe, are some kind of entity that is so different from anything else in sports. If you put this in front of any fan base, right, for 9 seasons, and the results were the exact same, you would be getting this exact feedback from any fan in any sport in any league.
And that's what gets missed, I think, outside the market, is that it's because this has been happening over and over and over again for so long with the exact same group of players. Like, I can't think of another example in pro sports where anyone would run this back as many times as they have. It just, like, even if you do believe in the players as individuals, as a collective, in this situation on this team, in this market, it doesn't work. We know that it doesn't work. And it's to the point where, people are going to, you almost feel bad that, like, it's like a failed experiment or something. Like, it's a mess. And the fact that they thought it could work, you know, my concern all this year, even as with the season that they had and people saying it was different and everything, was that they would get to this moment and it would happen again. And that's exactly what happened. And I don't know why they didn't see that.
Yeah. Well, I still stand by what I said all along, which is I think that the team was different. I think that the blue line was different. The goaltending was different. Obviously, they brought in a different head coach. They ultimately didn't end up getting enough secondary scoring in the series. But if you just look at where the goals came from, how many you got from Pacioretty, how many you ended up getting from Domi, how many you ended up getting from the blue line over the course of, you know, the 13 games that this team ended up playing, I do think they were different, but the stars ultimately ended up looking very similar to what they always have in these big moments, which was, that the production was down from what they scored a rate in the regular season. And they looked tight in these big moments. They looked overwhelmed, and they certainly weren't able to just kind of dominate their matchups, which is what so much of this is predicated on, even if it is a team sport, right? And I guess to that point of just running it back and how toxic it's gotten and why it is the way that it is, I had a friend who messaged me yesterday where he was like, man, I'm so tired of the broadcast always bringing up the stats from the past, as in like the last 9 seasons, not going back to 67. And I was like, yeah, man, but the past is the picture. Like, the past is the context of this, because if this was just year one or year two or even year three of a game like this, you could still be evaluating it with, okay, well, Florida Panthers are really good. Boy, what happened in game 5, game 7? That's so strange. That's so weird. But it's not. It's the Columbus series. It's blowing 3-1 to Montreal. It's losing, 6 straight game 7s five of those games with one goal. It's a completely unique set of circumstances from a play standpoint, from an organizational standpoint. And so to try to remove that from the equation to me is nuts. Like, I'm sorry, but they're tied in with these past failures. And yeah, I do believe that playoffs can be bad in terms of the small data sets that you get and trying to extrapolate these big, big, big picture takes. But when you have this many examples, I just don't know how even those people that you're talking to from outside organizations can't acknowledge that part of it, of going, oh, right, it's six straight game seven losses? Oh, five goals combined? Five of those games where you only score one goal for a team built around offense? That's what it is. It's taking all of this and unfortunately having to apply it to the same guys that have been here for all of them.
Yeah, I mean, in my column after game five, I basically took it to them and said, this is the worst game of the era, and here's why. And just with.
And then game seven was worse.
and then I just, like, some of the texts and stuff I got from people with in other markets and with other teams were like, you know, that it's a seven game series, you know, like it's, you know, like anything can happen and they can still come in. It's like, you don't understand. you just don't understand. You know, and like I said, the people who have been here and have seen it and watched it over and over and over again knew what was coming. This was the most likely outcome. When game five happened, when they blew game three the way that they did, this was the most likely outcome, that it would get to game seven and they couldn't deliver. That they would get to game five and they couldn't deliver. It's the same movie over and over and over again. Yep. People are tired of watching it. I'm tired of watching it. I'm not even a fan. I'm not even from here. I try and cover the team as objectively as possible. And it's just, it's a frustrating and annoying, I think, for everyone at this point. So, you know, we talked briefly about Shanahan. I think that's going to happen. I don't think Marner's going to be back. But I think that the changes are going to go deeper than that. You know, I don't think anyone at the top should think that that's enough.
Okay, I completely agree. But the last thing on the top part of this, because yeah, you just said something that was really important in the, hey, is Shanahan back thing, is you're like, yeah, but he's been already kind of removed from this now for a year. And even when we saw the press conference the last time, where it was the brass, right, where it was Pelly and where it was Tree Living and where it was Shanahan already kind of felt like a guy on the outside, just optically in that situation, where it was like, wait, What exactly is your role here? He might have even been asked questions about it. I can't quite remember it, but it never felt like.
Let me just interrupt, yeah, JD. Like they looked at moving on from him last year. So like, yeah, you know, exactly. Like I think that that was a very real possibility last year. So, you know, it was kind of a Hail Mary on his part to try and stay. So anyway, that's where that's at.
But the question I'm more interested in is not just scapegoating Shanahan, because, and not to say that he doesn't deserve it, because I think he absolutely does. And to me, there are some really significant moments that you can point to in terms of what I'm like referring to as the coddle culture and the way that he created it. And this idea, again, that I really do believe in, that instead of embracing the fans and trying to get everybody in the tent and trying to understand them better and trying to humanize the players more, that there was this like bubble that they created and they tried to keep those players inside of it and say, oh, don't listen to anybody on the outside world. Don't everything out there is mean and bad. And these people that they don't understand you. We understand that you are great players, that you are talented players, and we believe in you. We believe in you. It's like a toxic mother who's like, yeah, don't worry, don't grow. Yeah, I don't care that you're still living in the basement. You're my little special boy, and don't worry what anybody else thinks about you. I think he is directly to blame for that. But the question is, do you think that there's going to be a departure from this, that when they're evaluating what they have from the up top down, that there needs to be a shift in the culture and that they do need to do something about accountability rather than just have it be a buzzword that they use around the building whenever they fail?
I mean, it's going to depend who comes in and what the mindset they bring is and which players stay and how they embrace the change that comes. So that's a hard thing to answer right now, you know. I think that they need a new president to come in, and I think that they need, as you said, a culture change. And I'm sure they had all kinds of feedback from experts, and you know, they were bringing in sports psychologists for these guys going back quite a long time ago, and it's probably what they were told is that they need to be insulated from some of what was going on in the market, but it hasn't worked. And you know, you guys were talking about it on Leafs Talk last night, and I think you hit the nail on the head. They've created this adversarial relationship with the media and with the fans and everything, yeah, where it's them against the world, and it doesn't need to be that way, because you know, by and large, I don't think that the Leafs media is that bad. It's big. There's a lot of people, but you look at that press box, and you know, even if you look at what's written today, I don't see a lot of stuff that's like scathing, over the top, personal, unfair. You know, I didn't see, even this season, even you know, going into year 9 where it's been failure, I didn't see a lot of stuff that was really over the top or unfair that was said or written. You know, and in a lot of other markets, it would be, I think it would probably be a lot more personal and in people's faces than it is here. So, and maybe that's because I'm in, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't see that. It's not, you know, Brad Marchand talks about it in Boston, like the way the fans are there, they would never stand for this. And I saw some things at the game last night, and I'm sure they didn't show it on the broadcast. I mean, they probably couldn't show some of it on the broadcast, but there were fans that were getting up and throwing their jerseys on the ice during play. You know, I saw some, and they were going right up to the glass and doing like middle fingers, and you know, like the ushers were trying to get them, you know, out of there. And like, it was just like, it was something else. It was something that I've been around for almost 20 years. I never seen what was happening there at the end of the game last night.
You know what it is for that is, if you're a fan, like really, and I wish these players would put themselves in the shoes just once in a while and be able to really think deeply on it and relate to it. You're spending thousands of dollars to go to a game like that. You've had 9 seasons of this and still you're going, right? Like still you're saying, hey, you got a belief. Hey, do I think they're going to win? No, they'll probably lose, but God, what if they just do it? Because people here want to love this team. I've done this song and dance a billion times, but this team is tied to so many families and relationships and the identity of this city in a way that the others are just not. They aren't. It's been around longer. It's ingrained in who this city is. And this team has the audacity to turn around at these people after performances like that and say, well, if you would just behave, if you would just not act this way, if you would just not put the pressure on the players that you do. So when they play a game like game 7 or a game like game 5, and the idea is, well, it's so hard to play in front of those fans because there's so much pressure, that these people who have supported this group unwaveringly for decades, right? Decades, to see that product and then be told, well, it's also kind of your fault. That's what invokes middle fingers from the fans. That's what gets people to throw jerseys on the ice. This stuff only really started during the Dion days, right? And what was it? The Salute Gate thing, where it was players against the fans, where it's the team going, yeah, we don't like you guys. We don't particularly care for your brand of caring, and they will turn on you. That's the one thing that these fans can't tolerate. Leafs fans can tolerate losing. Like they have. Since 1967, it's well documented. There have been a lot of loser teams. But man, oh man, once you start to turn on the fans, it's hard to win them back. And that's what I'm talking about with the culture from the up top. And that's what I'm talking about, the thing that really does need to be evaluated. And all these sports psychologists and different people that you bring in there to advocate for you or tell you what you think you need to do to insulate these people. It's like, no, it's the opposite. You need to humanize the organization. And you need to look yourselves in the mirror, as Austin Matthews says, and understand the failings that you've had in terms of connecting to this base and allowing your players to do it in the same way. It's not the media's fault. It's not the fans' fault. Yes, there is pressure here. Yes, that mounts when you run it back for 9 seasons in a row. But the reason that you feel this vitriol is because you've told people here that they are a part of the problem, when the only reason that you are the most visible fan base in the NHL is because of them. The only reason that such a still large media contingency exists, or, you know, people are able to afford these stupid ticket prices and these jerseys that they can actually just even afford to throw on the ice, is because there are masses of people who still care about this team. Anyway, Marner, let's start with that because you were talking about cuts. I don't think he's back. You don't think he's back. The writing seems like it's been on the wall for a while. I think there's two questions with it. One is, do you still believe that he is going to get the offer in free agency that everybody was basically putting him down in pen for after what he did in this postseason, which was, again, I think he had three shots in his last five games. That, and I know he's a playmaker, but three shots in his last five games, including the brutal turnover in game five, the way that he looked throughout all of this, it's just, it's really difficult for me to envision a scenario where a team's saying, yeah, this makes sense at 13-5. And if you're the Leafs, what do you even think that these conversations look like between him and the team and trying to figure out a dollar amount or a term amount?
Well, I mean, are there conversations with the Leafs?
Yeah.
And I don't know the answer to that, but I just, like I said, I can't imagine that he wants to come back to this. You know, I think he had his doubts throughout the season, and that's why the contract didn't get done. So those doubts would just be really reinforced by what happened here. So I think it goes to July 1. I think there's going to be a lot of suitors because you look at free agency and there's no one else that looks like Mitch Marner available. Who's the next highest caliber player that's available? You know, the Leafs have been in the playoffs 9 years in a row, and you look around, there's a lot of teams in the league now that have not had success in a very long time that are desperate to have the kind of quote-unquote success that the Leafs have had. So, yeah, I think one of those teams is going to step up and make a huge offer. I think there's going to be a bidding war for Mitch Marner, even with the failures. And I think that the way you rationalize it, if you're an executive in, you know, I don't know exactly which teams are, you know, maybe, I mean, Carolina was obviously interested in him. They've got acres of cap space. Yep. And they could rationalize it there by saying what happened in Toronto and the toxicity that built up there over time is the reason why it didn't work out for him in the playoffs, not something inherent to just the player, and that in a different environment, he can have success. And I think that they might be right.
Yeah.
I think that he will probably play better and probably be a happier person in general somewhere else. You know, he's put in a lot of time here and it hasn't worked. So to be honest, at this point, I don't blame him for feeling like it's time to move on. I mean, again, you guys said it on the show last night, like it feels like he's the one thinking rationally about this at this point.
Yep.
You know, why were they trying to bring him back? Like, can you imagine if it played out this way and he had an 8-year deal with a no movement clause right now?
Oh. No, it's truly remarkable that he was the one that had the foresight to say, let's see how it plays out in the playoffs. Like, everybody from media to fans said the same thing going into this year. It was, hey, you can't extend Marner until you see what the playoffs look like. That, hey, 100 points is great. No one's ever doubted the talent of the guy. Like, it's very obvious how good he is at hockey. He's a great defensive player. He's received Selke votes. He's an awesome playmaker. He's fun to watch. There's a lot about him. He's a loved teammate, right? Like, you can't find a former teammate that has bad things to say about him. I've asked people off the record about Mitch Marner, like, many, many, many times. It always comes back the same way. Fun guy to be around, enjoyable person, tries to stay positive. Like, you know, people really respect his game. I think he will have success when he goes somewhere else. It's just, it's clearly not working here. And it seems like he's the only one who understood it because they're trying to level him with an 8-year, $13.5 million per season contract in the very middle of the season. And yeah, God, if he had taken that, I don't know what today feels like. It feels horrible. You feel trapped. You're going, well, what is the move? You're really going to just have all these guys return? It's just, you're letting Tavares walk, and that's the big differentiator between the past and the future. I don't get it. I really don't understand how they, again, were so disconnected from reality with this idea of, like, you just can't let talent walk. You can't let talent walk when the talent is not able to win here. Ultimately, that has to be the goal. It can't just be make the playoffs. That's the goal for some teams. That was the goal for them for a while. That cannot be the goal here moving forward. Okay, so yeah, I think he's gone. I think you think he's gone. It's unfortunate that they let it get to this place where most people think that the best thing for everybody is just to let talent walk, which is pretty much universal in professional sports, is the one thing that you never do. The question gets now to the next guy, the former captain. Tavares says he wants to be back. There is not a deep group of free agents. I think the interesting question with this is how hard do they squeeze him and how much does his postseason impact what the dollar figure is going to be? Because, yeah, it was always kicked around that it was going to be over $7 million. I don't think that that's an outrageous contract extension for him. But for Tavares, I do think that part of the legacy talk and, yeah, winning in the modern NHL climate is taking less than your market value. And the question becomes, how hard do they squeeze him and how open do you think he will end up being in terms of re-signing for something that is beyond team-friendly?
I mean, the squeezing has been happening all year. Like, the contract talks haven't really, they haven't really gone anywhere. You know, and the stuff that has been out there has been, I'm pretty sure, coming from the player side saying, you know, like, look at the contract that Joe Pavelski got. I think Pavelski got 3 years, $7 million a year. And you look at the numbers that he put up during the regular season, and you can see how people get there. And I think he could probably get that somewhere else with the way the cap's going up and with the lack of talent available and everything. But he's not going to get it here. And to Leafs management's credit, I think they've recognized that, and that's been the message. Because you look at what they need to do, you know, with bringing back Matthew Knies and trying to improve especially the forward group elsewhere, they can't give Tavares, they can't pay Knies and sign Marner and give Tavares $7 million. That would be, the team would be weaker than it was this year, and it needs to get better.
Yeah.
So I think what needs to happen here, I think that what should happen is there should be some sort of a legacy contract that Tavares should agree to. And if he's thinking he wants, he deserves $7 million over 3 years, take that $21 million, divide it up over a longer term, come in with a really low cap hit to where if he plays on the third line and the power play, that it makes sense. I think that's the only way that this is going to make sense for the Leafs. So yeah. Whether or not he's willing to do that, I don't know. I don't think it's gotten to that point yet. But that's the kind of conversations that we're having with Steven Stamkos and the Lightning, right? You know, they were trying to get him to sign a long deal with a low cap hit for similar kind of money to what he got in Nashville. And when he balked at that, he went to Nashville, and we all saw how that went. And I think that Tavares' season in general was kind of overpraised this year. You know, a lot of the production was on the power play, on the top power play unit, on a power play unit that was firing at 30% for the last 50 games of the season. But if you look at what happened in the playoffs, Tavares had 3 points at even strength in 13 games. He had one in this whole series. He was non-effective. So I think you have to really think about that and why that happened. And if he can really be the second line center at 35 years old, making good money on a team that wins a Stanley Cup, because I think the answer is no.
I agree. Man, again, like, small sample sizes, right? Small sample sizes. But in his career, in John Tavares' career, he's played 17 games in the second round of the postseason. He has 3 goals, 2 assists. So 5 points in 17 games. And he's getting older. Like, the idea that he is going to be able to play second line center for the next 3 seasons to me is...
No.
Yeah, I respect
him. I don't
think
he should do it next year. I mean, exactly. People have made fun of the idea of him playing on the wing for a long time, but it's a reality. In a series like this, he would have been more effective in that role if he had a really good puck-transporting center to play with, because he doesn't have the wheels. Or he's got to be a sheltered third-line center. And I know he brings a lot to the table, and I know he wants to be here, and he's a heart-and-soul guy, and he's putting absolutely everything into it. But absolutely everything wasn't enough, you know? So if you look down the lineup and where they were, he was making $11 million to produce 3 even strength points in 13 games. It's part of the reason they didn't win.
Mm-hmm. No, it's bang on. And it absolutely, like, the Stamkos thing happening actually kind of, I think, bodes well for the Leafs, because it's this perfect showing for him going, hey, you will be able to go to Utah. Like, Utah will sign you to the $7 million that you're looking for. but you're going to have to uproot. You're going to have to go there. And God knows if you're ever going to have any success. And is that what you want your career to be? Is that how you want the chapter with the Maple Leafs to end? The only way forward for him is to look at it and say, hey, man, you're already crazy rich. Yes, you would have to be taking less, but there is comfort that comes in it. And there is a chance for you to end your career, if this team was ever to be able to even just go on a deep run, to be the face of a guy who ended up taking less to be here, a different kind of leader, someone who cared about being a Toronto Maple Leaf. And like I said, with the fans, that is something that they deeply care about, is whether or not they feel like you care back. And he's got this opportunity to do that, but it's not at $7 million anymore. Like, I'm reluctant to even say what I think that they should feel comfortable doing, but I honestly think that the number, it's like, it's something with a five. And
I think it's lower than that, JD.
Even that, yeah, I was going to say, and even that to me was... is
if you go longer like, term, like I think the Stamkos one, would, I don't know exactly what it was, but I think it was like 3.75 over really long term, right? Like 7 years or something like that. And because the money in the end, how many more years is Tavares going to play and be really effective?
I don't know, 3-4 max.
So why can't you do, like, look what Tanev did, right? Like, Tanev's not going to play out the 6 years on his deal.
Nope.
So I think that that's the path forward. And Tanev got 4.5. And Tanev is a much more effective, well, I shouldn't say much more, but he's a more effective player right now at the age that he's at. I mean, he was one of their best players in the playoffs. So I think that I think the absolute high bar for Tavares should be like what happened with Tanev.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I just think for him, when we're talking about this market, it's like, who's the next best center?
Like, no, I know. But
yeah, no, for staying here, though, it's a different price.
For the organization, like, they have to start thinking about that as one of the holes they need to address, is that they've got to get better at center ice. And
for sure,
penciling him in as the second line center again and again and again, it hasn't been working.
No. Again, if you're talking centers that are available in free agency, it's like Yanni Gourde. You know, like that's
well, I mean, whatever, it's either the Sam Bennett thing, or you got to look the trade route, or you know, Lord knows there's a lot of trade candidates on this team now that maybe there that's weren't next. Before the playoffs started.
So let me ask you this, because you mentioned, hey, everything's on the table this time around, and they said it last year, but we all knew that it wasn't true, that nothing was really on the table. And that was really crystallized when they didn't even ask Mitch Marner to waive his no movement contract. He had a coffee with Berube and someone took a picture of it. And as far as we know, that was it. Hey, this guy's coming back. We're not even asking him to budge. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. We're not making it uncomfortable. Nothing, nothing, nothing. What do you think is the biggest thing that actually could be on the table to you?
Like I said, are we even 12 hours from when the game ended? Like, my understanding is that it could be things people aren't expecting. So I let you use your imagination. We still need the emotions were very raw last night, mm-hmm. you know, and the anger that the fans were feeling and the way that played out. I mean, there were members of the board and ownership there at the game. Everyone was there. They saw what was happening. They walked into the fancy suite under the stands after the game, you know, upset, frustrated. So I just think that they're going to have to evaluate everything. And I know people are trying to, like, put guardrails around, you know, there were some media people after game five, like, well, the only one here not to blame is Tree Living. And, you know, I think they got to look at the management group. You know, how many assistant GMs and upper-level managers does this team have now? It's become really bloated, and there's been a lot of people that have been there a long time. And, you know, when we talk about accountability, I think that the players get talked about too much, because I think that there needs to be accountability throughout the organization in all parts of it.
I agree.
And I think that they have to look at the failures of every department that they've got and everyone involved. And I think when we talk about Shanahan and the failure of it, it's not just bringing back the core. There are other failures that were there too. And that's what has to be rooted out and changed. And that's why I think it's important to bring in someone from outside who can help enact that change. That's what Shanahan tried to do when he came in 2014. And it in some ways it worked, because the organization was in a really dark place when he came in, but there were a lot of mistakes made. And like I said, there were mistakes made in this organization that go beyond just keeping these players. And I think that that's what I think everyone needs to wrap their head around, and ownership needs to wrap their head around, and what they need to try and fix, as opposed to just saying the problem was Mitch Marner or whatever, because that's too reductionist. That's crazy. And that's not what happened.
No, I don't think anybody thinks that. I really don't. Not a rational thinking person anyways. I'm sure there are some people who are just really pissed off and they've had enough of the core. So they're going, oh, whatever, Mitch can leave. And maybe just Matthews looks different with a different winger, blah, blah, blah. Nah, you're bang on with this. It's the front office. There's too many voices. The culture has been too ingrained with too many people. And yeah, I think that it's going to take some really uncomfortable uprooting for a lot of these guys. But with the roster itself, the next big domino to me is Morgan Rielly, who still has 5 seasons left at 7.5, but he has a no movement clause. I know that we're doing this early and whatever. We'll be doing this stuff as we get more information as time goes on here, but the likelihood in which they ask him to waive that no move, and your feeling just today of whether he's back.
I think the no moves shouldn't matter. You know, I think that the conversation needs to happen with, I think they got to figure out who new leadership is, and they got to put everything on the table. And that means players with no movement clauses. You know, JT Miller was a toxic situation in Vancouver, had a no movement clause, and they moved him, you know. And maybe the return wasn't amazing, but that's not what it's about. It's not about winning a trade here. It's about you have to change the organization in a fundamental way. And that's why, you know, the Leafs are the wealthiest team in the league. That's why you get people who can make these really difficult decisions and difficult moves and have them work out for them. You know, there's lots of examples throughout NHL history of people getting talented people in management, getting themselves out of difficult situations and trading players who people didn't think had value and getting, you know, people thought that Seth Jones had a terrible contract and was only, you know, was going to play for these teams that were in last place. And then you look at how well he's played against Tampa and Toronto in the playoffs. And he's been a huge part of that team.
He was their best player last night.
Yeah. And he's always been a super talented player, but, you know, I think in the wrong environments, you know, in playing in Columbus and in Chicago and these places where it wasn't going to work for him. But if he's your number 3 defenseman and he's playing against secondary competition and he's 6'6" and he can move the way that he does. So the Leafs, they need someone at the top who can identify those kind of opportunities and make them happen, because the teams that they're competing against are doing that, you know. The Carolina, Dallas, Edmonton, Florida, the teams that have moved on have done so for a reason. And, you know, I got to go down a couple weeks ago and spend 4 or 5 days in Carolina and get to know their management team and their players and how everything works there. And the expectation there is Stanley Cup or bust. No one is talking about like, oh, you know, if we make the 3rd round, that's great, the way that they are here.
Yep.
Like the culture and the, you know, for them, their season's a failure if they don't win at all. And I think it's the same in Dallas and Edmonton and Florida, and that's where the Leafs have to get. And they're not there because they've fallen short of even getting to the halfway point year after year after year. Yeah. So the expectation on upper management needs to be, who cares if there's no movement clauses, and you can't have any of these sacred cows anymore. Mm-hmm. I think that they should look at absolutely everything.
I think that's well said. And I honestly, when I was reflecting on it last night and thinking on stuff, and that was one thing I kept coming back to with the repeated failures of getting out of the first round and waiting so long to do it, is that it really did change the bar to just being like, hey, just get out of the first round. And then they finally do it. And what did the bar become? Hey, just get out, just go on a run. Just go on a run. What is that? That now my hope is that it gets back to reality, which is, yeah, is it hard to win a Stanley Cup? Sure. Can you always pull out the quote of 31 teams go home disappointed? Yeah, of course. But the goal here was to win a cup. That was it. It was always about ending the drought. It was not about going on a run. And that absolutely settled into the mindset of these players and this organization. Like, I remember talking to Tavares 2 years ago, asking him about getting over the hurdle of getting out of the first round. He's like, yeah, no, it was really big. How much conversation was there of like, they celebrated getting out of the first round too hard before they played Fort Lauderdale the first time? Like, that stuff was real. Anyway,
yeah, and I was wondering if they would have got through last night, if they would do the same thing about getting through the second round.
Yeah.
You know, and then go into the Carolina series not prepared to do what they needed to do. I think that would have been a real concern.
For sure. Last one. Do you think that we get the Matthews injury reveal? Because obviously they've wanted to keep this type lipped. Obviously part of the organization has been, we're not saying anything on any injuries. I know he's got something. Everyone knows he's got something. There's been murkiness. I've heard a couple of things, back, wrist, whatever. But to me, it's like you're the captain of the team, and part of this is going to have to be some explanations. And I can't imagine that it's the same as last year where he doesn't say anything, or it's like the regular season. Can you?
I mean, if you're making me guess, I would say there's some sort of procedure or something that he's going to need, or surgery or whatever, and that gets announced. But the whole thing's been weird. It's been weird. You know, I think it's pretty clear now that he likes to be private about this stuff, and he really didn't like when kind of the COVID stuff came out, and, you know, directly, you know, went back at the media member for revealing that and reporting that. And it's one of those things, though, you know, it's like if you're an A-list actor or whatever, some of your right to privacy, you lose it, right? And if you're the captain of the Maple Leafs playing in this market, it's people, I don't know. Like, it's pretty hard to be a private person with that kind of information. Yeah. So, I think they will. You know, I don't know if locker cleanout is tomorrow or the next day, but I think it will be talked about there. He was asked about it right after the game, like right after that. He was the first person that talked when the dressing room opened and we went in there. And it seemed like he kind of hesitated a little bit, and he said, "I don't think now's the time to." I think the reason he did that is he doesn't want to be seen as making excuses for the way they played that game. But I'm pretty sure it's going to come out. But it's been weird, and it's been weird with him and injuries for a long time. So, and I get it, and I'm sure he feels like he'll get targeted, and it'll be talked about ad nauseum, and he doesn't love that, but. Yeah. That's one of those things that does come with the role that he's in and the market that he's in. And that's one of the things you have to learn to live with.
James, sorry I had to try to get so many takes out of you right after. You're like the players yesterday where they're like, this just happened. We haven't had time to process. I'm like, yeah, I get it. This is
Think some of the decisions haven't been made yet. So we'll see. But I think that there's more on the table than people think right now.
Yeah. Well, we will catch up soon, and we'll be talking throughout this offseason, at least until early July. James Myrtle of The Athletic, thanks as always, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
That's the prevailing thought to me, is like, what's on the table? How deep does this go? And can they shift out of that mindset of, wouldn't it just be nice to go on a run? You can reach out anytime on Twitter and Instagram. Again, gone through so many messages, and I'm going to keep trying to go through more. I appreciate all the people that have sent them. Subscribe to this podcast. Quick break. We've still got Chris Versteeg coming up at 10. So again, I slept on it, but it's still very, very raw. People are going to want answers, but a lot of these are not going to come for days, weeks, months, whatever. But the one thing that everyone can agree on is that change needs to come. God, it's happened with the players, right? That's why Mitch Marner didn't just re-up for another 8 seasons when the Leafs offered him a contract extension. Seemingly, at least during the season, everybody knew it was on the line except for members of this front office. But once again, the fan base is no longer deeply divided when it comes to the idea that there's got to be a different direction moving forward here. Last night, my next guest sent me a wellness check, asked me how it was doing, and it was not good. He got the answer that he was expecting. It's Chris Versteeg, 2-time Stanley Cup champion and creator of the Clever app. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, thank you. How are you?
Well, I'm in God's country, you know, the province of champions, the place where they have moved on. So, I mean, I woke up in, like I said, God's country.
Ugh, it's ugly here. I don't know if you'll come back. I don't know if you come back, what you're coming back to. Let's put it that way, because it's just, it's bad here, man. It's really bad. Let's just start with a nice little open-ended question. What were you thinking about after the final horn yesterday?
Well, I was thinking about where does this organization go, and what will they do after what they just witnessed for another year, and what is the right answer? And Pelly, right? Is it Pelly or Kelly?
Yep, Pelly.
Yep. Like, what is your first question or your first thought of who's the biggest move and who do you need to bring in to make the right choices to do the right things? I know you could always look at the players and blame the players and all that, but how did you let that kind of culture fester and build for this long, and what do you need to do to change it so that you get the right people in to do the right things at the right times? And that was like kind of what I first thought of yesterday.
Yeah, I honestly, that's part where I don't know. I'm not in those conversations. I'm not privy to those things. I got certain guesses. Like, one of the things is pretty simple, that you obviously levy a lot of the blame at Brendan Shanahan because he's the one through line. It's been 11 seasons of Shanahan, but the accountability culture is clearly a problem, because what they came into this season bringing in Berube, and it was, this guy is going to be the accountability coach. There's going to be accountability culture that's made. You played for him. You known him. So many people have said the same thing about him, which is that, yeah, he's a no BS guy, and that he will bring some level of accountability to this team. And then what ends up happening as Marner and Matthews are failing to score for the entirety of the second round? It's like, it's the same thing. What happens when the power play is drying up? It's the same thing. There was no benchings. There was no skip shifts. There was no calling guys out in the media. They wouldn't even split them up. Even when the lines were shuffled, Marner and Matthews remained together. And I thought so many times, is this him? Like, is this really the way that he's seeing it? Or is this something where, again, it's built into the culture of the team? So yeah, Shanahan goes, but there's so many other guys that are going to be in that front office and that are around this team up top, people that no one even speaks about, where it is going to be an incredibly difficult job for them to try to root that out. Because without it being a top-down mandate, I don't think that it's going to change just because Mitch Marner leaves.
No, and that's why my first thought of what needs to change is what needs to change at the top. Because how many years in a row have we had this conversation? Why is the lines the same all the time? Why is this the same all the time? Why is that the same all the time? Why is the core the same all the time? Well, what is the recurring theme over that time? Like, why do things not change? Or why is there an entitlement that if you're at the top of the food chain, you stay at the top of the food chain as a player, right? But where does that come from? Like, where does that entitlement come from? And why does it string on year after year after year, no matter who the coach is and no matter who the players are? So when you have built that type of, well, if I'm a player and I'm at the top of the food chain and I'm never going to miss a shift if I don't play well, or if I'm always going to play with the same guy no matter who the coach is, if I don't play well, then where is it coming from? And that's why my first thought was, who needs to take the bull by the horns at the top and set a culture that holds every single player accountable? So that's why my brain goes to the top of the food chain at the start. What needs to be done? What are the decisions that need to be made? Because if you're going to keep running it back, we've said for every year, and if it feeds into the players, the accountability and the culture will not change. It will not change. And they weren't willing to make certain changes that change the culture that allows us to fester year after year.
So I'm watching all the media scrums from yesterday, right? Like, I stay up, I watch all the videos. I don't just read the quotes because I want to see the inflection and I want to hear what these guys actually have to say. And there's the one that really stuck out for me was actually not like Matthews has a line where he calls his, he says that there's too many passengers. And then Marner goes, hey, I agree with what he said. And I'm like, I don't know. You guys, like, are you referring to yourselves? Because yeah, you each had a goal. Marner had three games without a shot. He finished with three shots in his final five games in the postseason. Yeah, Matthews had the one goal, but all right, that's obviously not the bar for him. But the one that stuck out for me is Morgan Rielly speaks, and they ask him about what is it with these games, right? Like, what is it about these moments? And he's like, hey, guys care, but I just don't know what it is why we fail in these moments. And I'm thinking to myself, man, you've been here the entire time. And I know you don't want to just throw teammates under the bus or management, coaches, whatever, but Morgan Rielly is a sharp guy. He's a thoughtful guy. And yes, he actually did look a little bewildered with the question. And again, I'm curious to see what these guys say during locker cleanout and whether there is a little bit more transparency. But I'm like, yeah, man, you're in year 9 of this, like year 10 of being with the organization, and you don't have any idea as to what it is that causes this, like what's happening here. And it just stuck with me. And I haven't really been able to shake it because, again, I get it. What's he supposed to say is always the response that I get from people whenever these questions are asked to any player or any athlete. But it is that culture. It is that culture of accountability. Like, this is it. You guys got to do your 3 minutes after the loss at the end of the season. Then you've got to do another 3 minutes as you clean out your lockers. And then there's really never supposed to be an expectation from anybody for you to answer for any type of failing. It's just, hey, the past is the past and we're moving forward until basically rinse repeat, which, yeah, I don't think is good for anybody. And I don't know where internal accountability is supposed to come from. But the question here is, can you even have it with a large group of these players? Like, yeah, all right, maybe Marner leaves, maybe Tavares doesn't re-sign. But if you're bringing back a lot of the same core pieces, can you even shift this culture at this point with a new leader at the top?
Well, when you've brought in so many players that are your leaders that are the same, and I've heard so many people talk about this, when have you heard JT get pissed off or Matthews get pissed off or Marner get pissed off?
Never.
Or, right? Like, when your leaders are all very similar mindsets, and it's like, okay, let's just go out and bring in the best guys, or this guy's a good guy and he's a great. How much would you love to have JT Miller in that room who would be maybe the best guy that might ruffle a few feathers, right? Who might think differently, but is at the top of the food chain. And you don't have, like, players are always know the hierarchy, and in the best teams, everyone knows the hierarchy, but you don't have to say I'm the best guy. You know what I mean? But when your top players are all very similar in the mindset and they don't get pissed off, and then it allows your guy, like your coaches and your management and your president, if they allow those players to think they're above the rest and they can't be held accountable, and they don't have the different mindset of, okay, I'm going to tell this guy he's crap right now. Or you know what I mean? When it's a top down thing, and when your leaders are all of similar mindset, then the bottom end of the team doesn't feel important. And then that's where the blame seems to go. Let's just go bring in a fourth liner who gets pissed off like Ryan Reeves here and there. Or let's go bring in a third liner. That doesn't change the top of the pyramid on the team, because the top of the pyramid at the front office level allows that to happen. So you have so many guys. Like, I love Morgan Rielly because he is one of the guys that gets fired up. You know, he is one of the guys that says generally what he feels and what he means, but he's not part of the core four. You know, everyone sometimes adds him in, oh, he might be that fifth guy that's been around. But when you've separated those other four guys from the rest of the team and they're all of similar mindset, and the management has allowed it to fester that way and feel that way, you're going to get the same result time and time again. And that culture is not going to change. That's not going to say they're bad guys, but when you're just going out, oh, this guy's a good guy, or that, how about you bring in a guy who's a top guy, who's a prick like JT Miller? You know what I mean? Like, you need guys. I've played with Jonathan Toews, he was not always a guy that you would get along with on the bench at certain times, at certain moments of the game. He would get in your face. But here's the thing. I saw Marner getting guys' faces yesterday. Taze was going out and doing the right thing time and time again, so he had the ability to tell you that. Marner does that after he turns the puck over on the Jones no-goal, right?
Yeah.
Like, these are the things, when your top guys then call you out, when they're not doing the right things, it doesn't sit as well with the rest of the players. So you need to really look at everything top down. Who's your top guys? What is their mindset? You don't always have to bring in the same person. Bring in someone that might shake a couple leaves and ruffle a few feathers here and there. That's a bit different. And you also have to have a coach. Now, like, the coach, like, he did not change a thing the entirety of the playoffs. You have to have a coach that sometimes maybe reads a media thing and actually agrees with the media. So, like, I remember I texted you yesterday. It feels like when Babcock was here, he would do everything opposite of the media. Now, or with the media, opposite of the media, mess with the media. You need someone like Berube. I hope he learns from this, is like, I don't have to, just because the media says split up Marner and Matthews, I'm keeping them together now because this is what I'm doing. Or you need someone who does the right things all the time for the team, holds guys accountable, willingness that if it does make a bigger media storm than it should, I guess. Like, if he goes out and he splits up Marner and Matthews in game one and he has to answer questions because of it, you need to be willing to stand at the podium to take those answers and take those questions, but you need to be willing to do whatever it takes. Like, everyone's blaming the players too. I'm blaming the coaching staff. The coaching staff, it was like so stale and so redundant and no one's held accountable. You look throughout the season, we complained about the season. They never shuffled the lines when they could to see what else works. They never did anything else to get the other guys to feel important. So when you look at this entirety, it is top down the reason why they did not move on. And yeah, they made it to game seven, but they got dominated in game seven. Dominated. They got dominated in game five. They were not ready to get over the hump because of not only the players, but the staff did not prepare them well enough to get over the hump.
Well, even the stuff about getting to a game seven, it rings so hollow for me because it's like, ultimately, you didn't even make it halfway. You didn't make it halfway. So people can miss me with the, they made it to a game seven against Florida and trying to take so much out of, hey, the gutsy game six that they ended up playing. Like, to lay those two eggs at home, 5-7, that stuff's not normal. Again, this is a factity fact. That second period, Chris, that's the most shot attempts that any team faced all season long, regular season or playoffs.
I couldn't even believe what I was watching. It felt like I was watching a kid's hockey game where a triple-A team was playing a double-A team.
Yeah.
Like a moment like that, a game seven, a game five, to get absolutely dominated the way they did. Yes, it's part of the players. It's a coaching problem too. It's a management problem. Like, you set your team up to be in that situation, not to succeed, right? Who are the guys that were deployed? Why were guys not held accountable prior to that? Why were guys allowed to get away with not getting pucks out on the wall? Why were guys not allowed to get away with turning pucks over at the blue line? The first goal, the goal where it was Matthews, Marner off that, it got turned up. Everyone's blaming Riley. The TV was blaming Riley. It's like, what, like, and then they go back out the next shift. And I'm not saying that you got to always sit your top guys, but guys need to be held accountable. And when the bottom guys see that happen, then what does Lawton do the next shift? He tries to enter the zone and tries to make a sauce pass at the blue line. It gets turned over and almost another goal. It was allowed to get to that point, and they weren't able to perform at the highest level when it mattered the most, consistently, time and time again.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to the accountability thing and what you're saying in terms of overcorrecting to media stuff. Like, they would argue that, oh, we don't hear it. We don't pay any mind to it. We don't pay any attention to it. I know it's BS. I do. Like, factually, it's BS. They know what's going on. And In fact, I would argue it's actually been the opposite within the organization, that they've actually been way too obsessive about what people are saying on the outside. And it has created this part of the culture where instead of looking at something and saying, ah, you know what, this can actually be a bit of a resource. Is there a lot of BS in the media and amongst the fans? For sure, for sure, for sure. But the other benefit you get is that a lot of smart people have conversations, real thoughtful conversations about your hockey team. And a lot of it isn't just based out of trying to be angry or get clicks or whatever other thing that people think it is that is the main prerogative of these people that cover the team. It's that, yeah, you're getting offered some form of insight that can be useful to you. And it always seemed like to me that what they were doing with this lack of splitting, right, when it was so painfully obvious that you needed to look at it, like you needed to see it. And over the course of the regular season, they broke them up, I think, once, and it lasted a game. I don't even think it lasted in the entirety of a game, that they went back to it in the third period.
Whole game. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So they do it for a couple periods and it goes back. Is you're right. It's part of the culture of like, oh man, if we do this, that means that the people on the outside that they influenced us, that what kind of message is that sending to these players that we say block it out, but then we're listening to the outside world. No. We got to keep the bubble intact. We got to be in the bubble. Bubble, 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 bubble. That's all that they seem fixated on in terms of actually evaluating the problems and being like, yeah, you know what? Maybe some people are right. Maybe after 9 seasons of Marner and Matthews numbers going down in the postseason, maybe after what, 3 games where Marner doesn't have a shot, we're trying to encourage him to get to the middle of the ice and shoot the puck on the net. Like maybe we hold those guys accountable to try to live up to what the paychecks are. And it really does seem as though they're reluctant to do it because then in some way it makes them look weak to the outside rather than strong to just say, we also understand what this group needs. And we'll do what that takes rather than the narrative.
Yeah, you don't need to be scrolling Twitter to find what the trolls are saying. But when you have all this information coming in, you don't have to always go against everything. You should be able to parse it apart and see what people are saying and understand that you are making lineup decisions on what you believe is best, not what you believe you need to go against what these people are saying. So you're protecting your players. And I'm all about protecting your players. But at times, your players do need to be held accountable and understand where they sit. You are a player on a hockey team. You are here to come compete every single day. If you do not perform, this is what's going to happen. And again, you need to protect your players. But when you are just strictly going with what maybe you believe, so you protect them. I don't even know how I'm saying it, but you're protecting them against the media time and time again, and you're staying with inside this bubble. Like you said, the culture is allowed to fester. So you need to be able to coach a hockey team, take the criticism. Sometimes the media is right, sometimes they're wrong. You need to be able to make hard decisions and answer hard questions in a hard media market. But I think it is fair, too. Like, there are fair questions. Like, if you do split up Marner and Matthews, you should be able to go up there and say, it wasn't working, we need to see something else. We need to try something else. Even though someone on a Sportsnet column or a TSN column might say, hey, we were right. Look, the coaches are right. Who cares what they're saying after that? Yeah. Do what you believe is right. See other lineup. Like you said, we've been watching this for how long now, saying split these guys up or try something different or make the depth field important. But this is something you need to learn. And I hope, I really hope Chief learns that over this season, that, man, I needed to make better decisions. I needed to prepare my team better. I needed to get them more dialed in for when these moments come that they're ready.
I think that's really well said. I gave him the benefit of the doubt all along with the way he handled those guys from this standpoint. Because when I talked to Rick Bowness this season, like probably, I don't know, January, and he shifted my perception on a little bit because he spoke from his experience as a coach of the Jets where he went, you know, year two is where I really felt like I settled in with the group and they really started to buy into the system differently. And I knew my leadership structure better, go on down the line. And part of me wondered all along if Berube's experience in St. Louis, that final year where, you know, he famously called out Jordan Kyrou and lost him, if he thought, I got to be softer on these guys year one, gain their trust, and then be the coach that I really want to be moving forward. But once it came to playoffs and it was like, hey, man, everything's on the line, to do it the way that he did it, I had a tough time with it. I really did. And I think that you're right to point out the failings of the coaching staff as well, because they should. Yeah, sure, it's year one for them, but they were also supposed to come in here and be a difference maker. And at the end of the day, it was the same stuff that we've seen in the past in terms of the coddling and the protectionism and, yeah, running the same thing out there over and over again.
What's the problem with coming in and coddling early on if you're a coach with a short shelf life? Like, if you bring in a coach who's, like, more worried about his job than winning, because it's like, if I piss these guys off a little too much in year one, I might not have a job in year three. What are you doing? You are there to win hockey games. You are in the biggest market in the best hockey league in the world. You do need to protect your players is what I'm saying. You need to protect them, but you are in there to win and you need to do whatever it takes. When Craig took over that St. Louis team, do you think he went in there coddling guys when that St. Louis team was struggling at the start of the season? He did go in there. He built relationships. He built trust, but he held guys accountable. He was a prick at times, to play for and to compete for day in and day out. But if you're worried about your job in 3 years from now, how will you be successful at that point in time with the team you need to be successful with? Right? Like, you can't worry about 3 years from now. He's going to get another job 3 years from now, whether he's with the Leafs or someone else. You are there to do the job. Like, if you're a hardcore coach, you got to understand and look within inside yourself. I have a short shelf life and I'm doing this my way. This is how it's going to be. And if I'm here in 2 years, so be it. If I'm not, who cares? I'm going to move on to my next job.
Well, and to the playoff point, nothing stuck with me more than this when you were talking about it, because it's like, hey, year two. It's like, okay, year two might be the last year, because man, Pete DeBoer has made the Western Conference Final 6 of the last 7 seasons. He's been fired twice in that span.
Twice? Like,
it's like, the modern day coaching, you don't get the same amount of time. Do I think that it's flawed? Do I think that it's fair? No, but yeah, the idea that, okay, well, next year I'll hold these guys accountable. Like, man, this might be a third of your entire tenure here. Like, it's nuts. It's nuts
you're
to treat it that way.
You're not winning. So do it your way or get out.
Exactly. Exactly right. So that's where, again, this postseason shook me a little bit in terms of the approach, because I went, wait, why is it the same here when all the chips are down? I want to go back to what you said about Marner, though, in terms of, hey, this team and these guys never get angry, because he finally gets angry, right? And part of me is reluctant to do this because it feels almost petty. But as someone who's watched this team and watched every, like, damn near every game of Marner's professional career, they've had a couple of these, right? Like, they had it last year on the bench where they're bickering at each other, and now the audio has been leaked of William Nylander, who says, this is your guy's problem, you're always bitching. To me, like, when you're the guy who's one of the highest paid players, gets all the power play time, gets to play with Matthews, and you're not producing in the series, right? You get one goal that is a muffin from the half wall, seeing eye puck that beats the goaltender, multiple games without a shot, multiple games where, you know, game five, the backbreaking moment is you turning it over. Him screaming, wake up, to the bench with dry hair, it seemed to me to be petulant and like a meltdown. Like, when these guys get pissed off, it always looks like a meltdown, not like, oh crap, we got to get things in order. And I saw even the way the bench reacted as he was yelling it. No one's, you know, engaging with it. They're like looking away. And yeah, I do think that says something about the leadership of this team and the structure they have and the need for something new to come from the outside. Because if your best player or one of your best players, whatever you think Marner is screaming that and it comes off as like childish, I think you got a problem.
Well, there's a time and place for everything, right? And when we're seeing their frustrated moments, it's when they're down 3-0, the game's out of reach, similar to that, I think it was the Amazon series, they were frustrated, the game's out of reach. Do that when it's 0-0 And your team hasn't got a shot on goal yet for 10 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, and then I hear the, I texted it to you, like, I hear the Sportsnet panel, be positive. They need to be positive. Are you kidding me? Be positive. It's 3-0 and we haven't got the puck in their zone for 40 minutes right now. But when they're getting frustrated is when the game's out of reach. When they're getting ticked off, when Marner got ticked off, the game was out of reach. Like, it was 3-0. Yeah, they scored a goal, but then they got scored against a minute later, and great teams never get scored against after they score a goal. That's another thing. But they're getting pissed off after the game's out of reach, or when the tipping point is hit. Where are those moments when the game is 0-0? Like, I can think back on all the great teams I played. The game might have been a shift in, and I was already getting screamed at by somebody. Like, one shift in, and you're getting told to wake up or wake the F up or do this or do that. Like, you don't always need to wait till the game is as frustrating as possible at a 3-0 or a 4-0 loss. Like, that, the game's over by then, man. Like, get pissed off. A shift in the game, if you see a guy not getting a puck out on the wall, or if you see a guy not making a play, and it's like, but then you, it's like, be positive. No, you should have been pissed off 25, 30 minutes ago, giving it to your team to light them up, because that's when it matters. That's when it matters the most. You should have done it in game 5 when you were getting owned in the first period of game 5, right? Like, it's, there's a time and place for everything. When the game's out of reach and you're at your most frustrated tipping point, I understand it. I've been there. I've screamed and yelled and broke my stick. I mean, I've had temper tantrums, right? At the worst moments too. But where's your leaders when the game is still within reach? Like, when it was 0-0, I was hoping Matthews was going to go smash his stick in front of the bench, you know? But then you got to hear the panel say, be positive. No, that's the time you light a fire in everyone. Right? Like, where is those moments when the game is still on the line?
Man, they've been too few and far between. And honestly, I think that there's this weird level of self-satisfaction that this group has always had too. Like, oh, well, we should also be proud of, we did a lot of good. And you're like, yeah, you didn't win. Like, you should just be dying to win, hating to lose. And I saw that yesterday again when they're meeting with the media, and people think I'm too critical of this stuff. A lot of people do, which is fair. I'm open to hear that, but Matthews comes out and Marner, same thing. Like, they're talking about how they thought they did well at the second half of the first period. Like, why are you even bringing this up? You had a first period where you got...
What did McKinnon do when he lost before he won the cup?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
Was there any talking about, oh, we played good here or there? What did McKinnon say, right? Like,
it's
that's what
just
you want.
Attitude. Of course. That's what I mean. It's the mindset that you have to have. Where, like, I can't even believe you're bringing this up. You had a first period where you got a couple of scoring chances, and you're like, hey, well, we, you know, and then Matthews does the thing, and this is where I want to go next. He mentions that the team has too many passengers, or that they had too many passengers in that game. And I thought that was tough because he didn't go, myself included. And I don't want to blow up this quote too much, because this is where it's like, okay, he's in a heated moment. And I want guys to say how they feel too, right? Like, I'm so tired of the generic responses of the, we don't know why it goes this way and we care. And it's a lot of talented individuals. And like, all that stuff to me is so played out and so done. I would just rather actually tomorrow during locker room clean out. Yeah. Some guys actually get thrown under the bus. Like, who cares? Say how you feel, be honest, because this is over. And things need to change. And I kind of want to suss out which one of these guys actually kind of gets it. And to me, being forward facing with the public is sort of a part of that. But what did, I don't know if you saw it. I don't know if, you know, you read it. But yeah, that was the questions. They were asked, Matthews was asked what went wrong. He mentioned the first period, said it went poorly. Then the second half of the first period was good. Then the second bad. And then he said the team had too many passengers. What would you be thinking if you're his teammate hearing that?
Well, and Quenneville used to give us great insight on how to handle the media in these moments and what to do. Mm-hmm. You don't have to throw anyone under the bus. It's a team game. We were not good enough. I was not good enough. Put it to bed. What would connect the most with the fans? I was not good enough. I need to be better. That's it. Like, there, you don't even need to go into the game in, at all. You don't even need to talk about the game at all. I came. I was not good enough. It's over, right? Like, the team was not good enough, but I was not good enough. And that's it. You don't need to throw anyone under the bus. You just need to hold yourself accountable in those moments. You can talk about the team not being good enough, but you need to hold yourself accountable for the fans, for your own teammates, to see that you took responsibility for not getting the job done. And that is it. You do not have to go into any parts of the game. You don't need to talk about the season. You don't need to talk about the staff. The best advice I was ever given was, if you make a mistake, take responsibility about that mistake during the game. If you didn't have a good game, take responsibility about it and be better the next game or be better the next season. I think that's the best way to handle it. I would love just to see guys to come out and say, I was not good enough. I need to be better. And that's it. I need to be better. And I think it will connect more with the base. Obviously, it'll still tick off a few people. Well, he needs to be better here and there. But own the responsibility personally, and you don't need to throw anyone under the bus that way.
Mm. So speaking of under the bus, that's what has been happening with the fan base. Not from the Leafs necessarily in terms of what they've said, although I would argue that it has been a lot of the last few seasons that there has been some, hey, the fans overreact, and that's why they do try to keep the quote-unquote noise out. But afterwards, Paul Maurice said, this was so much closer than you think. You're going to kill these guys, and they don't deserve it. Brad Marchand talked about how the fans beat the pressure into the players, and I saw Tkachuk has a quote out today of, if it wasn't for the circus, they would be a really great team. Like, all these Panthers players and figures are coming out with all these thoughts of, like, hey, you know, you got a great team here. It's just that it's the media, it's the fans. It's that's the issue in Toronto, is it's not the talent of the players. It's all the people who watch the team, which to me is like the most aggravating thing, especially if it is in that locker room, right? If it's in the dressing room and it's in the organization, then I think you have a real problem, because those are supposed to be your supporters. Those are supposed to be the people that you kind of are what doing. You do it for yourself, but if you are doing it for others, it's supposed to be your fans. I guess from the player's perspective, and you've played here, and granted it was different times, and you've been in high-pressure markets, low-pressure markets, do you think that there's any credence to any of this conversation?
Well, I loved listening to Paul Maurice wax poetically about the Leafs fan base and not giving it to the Leafs, and this was a closer series and all that. That was interesting. And even Marchand, it was almost like a little bit of.
He said Game 5 was really close. He says one of the second closest game of the series.
Yeah, and you go look at the shot attempts, and you go look at the ozone time, and you look at everything, and it I understand what they're doing. It's almost like a reverse psychology and lay off the players. It's a close series, and trying to make sure that they, I guess, karma wise, keep building their karma as they go on into the playoffs. It was interesting, and I do understand why the Panthers are saying it. The series is over. There's no need to keep beating them down and build up your opponent, and it's out of respect. So totally understand where they're coming from. But when, you know, when you play in a high pressure market in Chicago, obviously it's different than Toronto, because Toronto, yeah, it is really the Mecca, but it was high pressure in those times. The team hadn't won in 49 years. We had 1 year to do it in 2010. And then obviously the guys, they kept the core together and they kept going. But when you didn't perform, the media asked you straight up, why were you here? Why didn't you do this? Or why didn't you do that? So we had 50 cameras in the room asking us questions after every game. But as a player, you need to want to be in that situation, and you want to have to thrive in that situation. And I do think the media in these big markets holds players accountable. And that's what some players like and some players don't. And you just need to be able to thrive in a market where it's going to hold you more accountable than others. So yes, does it play into the psyche of a player? And is it a little bit harder to play in these markets, especially in big moments and big times? Of course it is. But certain players are built to play in big markets, to play in big moments at big times. And they all know who they are. And like I've played in LA where the media wasn't as big in a media market like LA, sorry. But, you know, you still have your own internal pressure. You have your organizational pressure to win. So I never felt there was a difference. It's just the amount of cameras that were in the room, the amount of questions you get, because as a player, you need to be able to block it out and still do what you need to do. But I think there is those certain players that love thriving in a big market at big moments and big times, because look at the reward that you get if you can do it in such a place.
So if I was part of the management team, like if they were like, hey, we're bringing you in, we want you to have your own private exit interviews with the players. One of my first questions to them would be, how did you feel when you saw the jerseys go on the ice? And if they were like, any hint of, oh, you know, it's just, it's disappointing to see our fans not stick with us this way, or yeah, you hate to see it, and it's just not, it's not good. Like any sentiment of, we don't like that from those people, you'd be gone. The only response to me would be this, period. It would be, we're embarrassed that we let it get to this point. Like it, we gave an embarrassing effort, and they deserve to do exactly, like react however they wanted to, because what we did was completely unacceptable. And then I'd be going, okay, cool. We can have this guy stick around. We can have this guy stay in this market. It'd be honest to God, as simple as that. So one of the lessons for me out of this entire thing is, have the Leafs accumulated some of the most talented players on earth? Yeah, that's, there's no question, right? Nylander, second in goals this season. Matthews had a 69-goal season. Marner, 100 points. Tavares, extremely decorated regular season career. Morgan Riley, right, has had a 20-goal season and has been one of the better offensive defensemen points-wise over his tenure as a Leaf, right? Like, there's so many guys with talent. But some of these guys are not, I don't think, the what you're describing, where they can fit into a market like this and that they can take that internal accountability and understand the challenges that are in front of them. And instead of shrink or be resentful of that pressure and moving forward, they absolutely need more dogs. Playing in this market should matter. It's like, okay, fine. If it's hard to play here, find the right guys who are speaking the way that you are in terms of like, yeah, all right, it's just more cameras. And I, the one conversation I have that's sticking with me in all of this, and I was thinking about again last night, I had Gary Roberts on right before the Ottawa series started, because we were going down memory lane, and I asked him about the media, and he said something along the lines of, I loved it because it did hold me accountable. I knew there were eyeballs on me every night. Like, I would go to the rink and I'd feel like every little small play, every detail was going to be scrutinized, and I thrived in that. And I've played in places where you could have a bad game and nobody would notice, and I didn't feel like I played my best hockey. And I'm going, yeah, you got it. There's a reason why Gary Robertson wins Stanley Cups here, but he is loved here. You can't go, you could never, you could, I challenge anybody, go find one person in this city who is of, you know, our age that was like, yeah, it wasn't really a Roberts guy. It's like, you won't, you will not find it, period. Because the guy was a dog, because the guy understood that the pressure was a privilege. And so many of the guys on this team, I don't think do. I think they view the pressure as a nuisance. And that has got to be part of what they look at moving forward. It's like, hey, can we get guys who look at it the way that Roberts does, which is, hey, I'll be more accountable and that's going to keep me sharp.
Well, they need to look at guys who elevate in the playoffs.
Yeah.
We need to look,
but that, I think that's part of that.
And that is part of that, because like you're saying, the media whole, like the media and the pressure of playing in a big market. And he's right. Like when I played in Chicago in those moments, or if you played in Philadelphia, like you think it's hard here, go play in Philadelphia at times. Like you, every single play, he's right. It does hold you accountable. I played in Carolina. It's a Tuesday in Carolina and you're like half sleeping during the third period in a tie game. You don't even know you're in a game when we weren't very good there. But you need guys, you need to find guys, say Connor Brown. I know he's a player that doesn't come up in the regular season. He elevates in the playoffs. Sam Bennett has average regular seasons, elevates in the playoffs. You need to find guys that up their game when it matters the most. Understand, like you said, who the dogs are. I think these top players, they do got to go through a lot here. They have to go through a lot of pressure. I think they handle it really well in the regular season. But again, from a coaching staff perspective, they are not prepared enough to take the pressure in the playoffs. Maybe personality-wise, they can't as well. But when you're just allowed to go out the door every shift, no matter how you're playing, for year after year after year, and there's no accountability, that doesn't prepare you for the hardest games or the hardest moments in the playoffs, that's a failure too, that you have not prepared those players. So yes, we can blame the players. I also blame the coaching staff, that when it gets to the high pressure moments, you don't even know who the other dogs are because no one else has been prepared for this moment. You're just relying on the same four guys to get the job done that have to score you the goals time and time again. So yes, it's a player problem, but it's a massive coaching failure as well, that these guys, they weren't even allowed to find who the other dogs are. Like Max Domi seems to be able to elevate, but he doesn't get put in all the situations always. Oh, let's flip him on finally when the game's 5-0 onto the first line for his first opportunity, or 3-0, right? Like, they don't even know, like, even if you bring dogs in, are they going to get put in that situation?
Yep.
You know what I mean?
No, man.
So that's part of the problem. Yeah, let's go keep fixing these guys and bringing in Kyle Clifford back in the day, and then Ryan Reeves, and now Lorenz. And Lorenz was your best player in the first period, but he still didn't play hardly.
Yeah.
Right? He didn't elevate in the lineup. So you can do this. You can find dogs, but will they even be deployed properly? You bring in Scott Laughton, he goes to the fourth line 4 games into being brought here. You know, like... yeah, you can find dogs, but if they're not played or they're not feeling important, does it even matter?
No,
right?
I think that's really well said, man. I really do. We got to run. Christopher Stieg of the Clever app and 2-time Stanley Cup champion. Quick break, and we'll close this out. So here's my message for today: find the dogs in the front office, in the coaching staff, on the roster. If you're blaming the market today or questioning yourself as a fan, you're doing it wrong. Find the dogs. We'll see you tomorrow.